Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum with all members present.
Member Welton, could you please read the board goals?
The vision of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District is Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Our mission, Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn, and success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Our core values, stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, and lack of reprisal. Our goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff.
Thank you. Mr. Cottle, can you lead us in the pledge? Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Powger. Is there any dissent in approving the agenda? Agenda is approved. This takes us to our first persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Specifically under the agenda item, persons to be heard on non-agenda items, the following guidelines apply. If speaker states his or her name for the record, the speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. Speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room clear if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. It's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting. Madam Clerk, do we have any folks signed up?
We have no one signed up.
Is there anybody that has not signed up that would like to speak before the board on non-agenda items? Seeing none, there'll be another session before the meeting is over at the end of the meeting. Thank you. This takes us down to item four, borough and city reports. Superintendent Farmer, do we have any borough and city reports today?
No, Mr. President.
Thank you. This takes us down to item five, administrative reports. Superintendent Farmer.
Thank you. We do have an administrative report this evening, which is the Matsu Borough School District Post-School Outcomes Study of years 2006, 2008, and 2010. I'd like to give you a little bit of prior information before our presenter, who is the owner and chief researcher for Alaska Research and Evaluation Services, Dr. Tarsi. This occurred last year as you know, either at the federal level, state level, maybe even local level, that there's lots of stakeholders, if you will, letting us know about our graduates and how our graduates are doing or what they're not able to do, whether they are successful or not successful, and how K-12 is doing in educating kids. We didn't know the answers. And so what we decided to do in a conversation with Lucy Hope, she shared with me some information about a study we do at the state level for students with IEPs. It's a requirement for No Child Left Behind to have students with IEPs followed 1 year after high school to find out what are they doing. And so we took that idea and ran with it. We spoke with Mr. DePriest, Director of Career and Technical Education, to assist with this process and to generate the funds that would pay for this survey. So through ARRA funds and early intervening services and funds from EED, as well as the Career and Technical Education Carl Perkins, we were able to pool enough money and create this study that lets us know what are graduates from the year 2010, 2008, and 2006 doing. The information will be presented today, and you'll have an opportunity for questions. We did limit the time to 20 minutes because it is an administrative report. However, if the board would like, at their pleasure, we can create a work session to dig deeper into the study. The study is quite long, but we narrowed it down to these 23 slides to give you a mind's eye picture of what MATSU graduates are doing. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Dr. David Tarsi from the Alaska Research and Evaluation Services. And you can come up to the would you rather stand or go? Okay, so it won't pick it up. We're on Radio Free Palmer. And if you could sit and talk on that, then those folks at home can hear. And we could still follow your pointer, though.
Well, I apologize for the people sitting behind me who might not be able to see or not making eye contact with them. But thank you for the introduction. And as Deanan mentioned, this is the culmination of about 9 months of work. We started in March discussing what we're going to do. And what I'd like to do is make this as conversational as possible in 20 minutes. So if you have any questions as we go through the slides, please don't hesitate just to ask. Well, I'll give a really brief overview of the purpose and the goals, our methods, and then the results in terms of employment and education. And there'll be an opportunity to make discussion at the end. The purpose was to determine post-school outcomes in terms of post-secondary education and employment, and our goal was to survey 40% of the graduates from 2006, 2008, and 2010. In terms of methods, the school district provided the last known student contact information. We used a modified version of the Dillman method of survey research. So we sent out an announcement postcard to everyone, letting them know that they would be receiving a phone call. And that heightened awareness and also gave them a number of incentives. We wanted to know what they were thinking, what they were doing, that their answers might be able to help somebody else, and then also an opportunity to win a few gifts. And the second phase was a telephone interview. This was a census. We tried to contact as many people as possible. The school district secured a memorandum of agreement with the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, so we had access to the most current addresses and telephone numbers of everyone who was currently receiving the permanent fund dividends. And the study was conducted over the summer. The survey was developed in conjunction with your administrators. We focused on four areas: education, employment, and living characteristics, and then respondent perceptions of preparedness for life after high school. The survey consisted of 8 to 18 questions, depending on their answers. If someone said they were not working, we didn't ask any follow-up questions about the nature of their employment, since they had none. We conducted descriptive statistics and then a relative rates ratio analysis, essentially proportions of certain types of characteristics. So in the end, we'd be able to say certain groups were 1.5 or 2 times more likely to be employed or go into higher ed than other groups. In terms of data reliability, because what we're really talking about is how trustworthy this information is, our response rates were 40% across the board for 2010, 2008, 2006. You can see we surveyed 452 individuals out of 1,134 graduates in 2010, 398 out of 995 in 2008, and 397 out of 997 graduates. So that 40% response rate is extremely high for survey research, but it begs the question, what happens to the other 60% that you didn't contact? So we did a representativeness of respondents analysis. We wanted to see how closely our respondents matched up with the target populations. And we know a lot about the demographics of your graduates, so this is relatively easy. For instance, in 2010, out of the 1,134 graduates, 510 were males, which was 45% of your graduating class that year. We reached 208 of those 510, which was 46% of all the respondents for 2010. So we subtracted the 45% from 46%, and we see that males are overrepresented by 1%, which is extremely close. Anything beyond a plus or minus 3%, we'd have to think maybe the results are skewed somewhat. But I'm happy to report that, for instance, in 2006 respondents by school, everyone was within that plus or minus 3% range. And that's the case also for most of the other characteristics. Except for male respondents in 2006, they were 1.6% beyond that 3%. So they were 4.6% overrepresented, which is very slight. And the same with Caucasian respondents in 2010 and colony respondents in 2010. I'm going to get my bottle of water. I'll be right back. So all of the respondent demographic characteristics were within plus or minus 3% of the target characteristics. So we looked at gender, school, and ethnic categories. We have a high degree of confidence that our sample, the people who responded, reflect the target populations. In terms of definitions, for higher education, what we're looking for to be included in that category is whether or not somebody was enrolled in a 2 or 4 year college or university for 2010. For 2006 and 2008 graduates, we asked the question a little bit differently. We asked if they were enrolled in a 2 or 4 year college or university, and then we followed up by asking whether or not they had completed, they were in continued enrollment, or if they had dropped out. There was also a career and technical education training question and a short-term employment training program, a category. Definitions for employment, living wage, we discussed at length where we should set that living wage, and we determined that full or part-time employment and making over $60,000 a year would be considered a living wage. We had three different categories, and these are rank-ordered categories. So it doesn't necessarily mean that living wage is so much better than competitively employed, because to be in the category of competitively employed, you have to work for 20 hours a week for more than minimum wage. And if you were a 2010 graduate, we asked an additional qualifier if you've worked at least 90 days non-continuous in the last year. And then some other employment is employment below the level of competitively employed. So that category of competitively employed has quite a large range. It could be somebody who's making just under $60,000 to somebody who is working only 20 hours a week making minimum wage. And then some other employment is a relatively low category of employment. In terms of results, for 2010 graduates, in the last year, 59% said they were enrolled in higher education. 5% said they were making a living wage. 14% said they were competitively employed. And I need to clarify that a little bit. You'll see on future slides that there are more people actually competitively employed in this 14%, but in order to capture both employment and education in one graph, we had some decision rules. So if somebody was in higher education, in order to avoid double counting, they weren't counted the second time as being competitively employed. So those who weren't in higher education or weren't making a living wage but met the criteria for competitively employed are in the light green. Career and technical or short-term education were 6%, some other employment 12%, and then the last category are those who were not in school or working, disabled 2%, other 3%, which includes some taking time off, deciding on what to do, moving, and starting school later. Then those who were unemployed were those who weren't working or weren't in school but were actively looking for a job and could not find one, which is the classical definition for unemployment. In 2008, We see that 39% had continued enrollment, 3% were making a living wage, 14% were, again, competitively employed, some other employment at 23%. And this is a snapshot in time of what you're doing right now. And there was a number who were not either employed or in school. 9% other, including missions, volunteering, moving, traveling, incarceration. 3% said they were staying home with children. And then 6% unemployed, looking for work and not being able to find it. In 2006, we see very similar results, smaller number of continued enrollment in higher education, presumably because more people are graduating, a higher percentage of making a living wage because they are probably out of higher ed or whatever program that they've gone into. Competitively employed and also increased as more people start to achieve adult self-sufficiency, even just 5 years out of school. They're moving out and, you know, gaining employment. 3% said they were in career or technical education or short-term employment education program. 18% in some other employment. 1% disabled, 5% other, and 5% children, and 4% unemployed. Are there any questions so far? Okay, I'll continue. I think this graph shows a picture of that path to adult self-sufficiency. You see the largest percent, 59% in 2010, are enrolled in higher education. That percent drops in 2008 and becomes even smaller in 2006, while the green, the dark green, and the light green becomes larger as people start to enter the workforce, become competitively employed, or earn a living wage according to the way we defined it. And keep in mind that in 2010, we asked any time in the last year, did you do any of these things? So they have a much smaller number of people who were not working or unengaged. In terms of employment results, in 2010, 6% said they were living wage earners, while 36% said they were competitively employed. You see very similar numbers in 2008. And in 2006, that percentage increases for both, for the living wage earners, but it stays relatively the same for competitively employed. Some other employment, 39%, 28%, 24%. Then we have the not working category, when that includes people who are doing other things, taking care of children, moving, missions, traveling. And then unemployment again at 1%, 6%, and 4%. To clarify those results a little bit, what we've done here is to put education alongside of the employment results. So you can see in 2010, that's the right-hand column, that 36% who said they were competitively employed, out of that 36%, 22% of our respondents were also in higher education. So they're working and going to school at the same time. In terms of some other employment, the 39% who said that they were working, that lowest level of employment, 24% of our respondents were also in higher education. So they're working and going to school at the same time. Those who were not working, or the other category, 12% were engaged in higher ed. And you can see those similar results in 2008 and 2006. So the yellow stripe along the bottom shows that 59% were in higher ed, 39% in 2008 were still enrolled in higher ed, and then in 2006, 27% were still enrolled. In terms of job type, the majority of people were involved in a company, business, or service industry. A smaller percentage in the military, even a smaller percentage self-employed, and then also family business. It may be that there were more people in the military, but most of the people that we surveyed happen to be still here in the state, which would make it more difficult to reach somebody who was out of the state. That's one of the limitations of the study, is the people we haven't reached. We're not sure where they are. They may still be in the state, or they may be elsewhere. In terms of education results, this graph is a little difficult to read through the overhead projector, but I think it's a little clearer on the handout. In terms of higher education, continued enrollment, 59% in 2010, 39% in 2008, and 27% in 2006. But below that, in the darkest area, 7% from the 2008 graduates have graduated from a 2 or 4 year college or university, and that's increased to 20%. And if the study continued another 3 years, if you know we looked at somebody who was 7 or 8 years out, then the majority would have graduated unless they'd gone on to some type of graduate degree. Then also in 2006 and 2008, there's a category for those who had dropped out at 11% and 15%. Career and technical ed is very close, you know, across the board, 7%, 7%, and 10% across the years had gone on to some type of career or technical education. 7%, 9%, and 10% had gone on to some type of short-term employment education program. And in 2010, 22% did not participate. 2008, 23% did not participate in post-secondary education. And in 2006, 21% did not. So to subtract, for instance, 2006, that means that 79% of all the graduates who responded had gone on to some type of post-secondary education. And that would also be 77% in 2008, and that looks like 73% in 2010. In terms of perception of preparedness, we ask a question, do you feel high school prepared you for school or work after graduation? In 2010, 54% said yes, 62% said yes in 2008, and 56% said yes in 2006. Somewhat was another category, and you can see the results across those years, and then no, also in the red at the top, as well as the number of people who did not answer the question. I can read those, Dean, if you want me to. Okay. So the takeaway results, I think I mentioned this already, 77% of the graduates in one of the years went on post-secondary education, including 2 or 4 year college, career and technical ed, or short-term employment education program. In the 2006 cohort, 59% went on to higher ed, 20% graduated, 28% were still enrolled, and 11% dropped out. 50% of the graduates are competitively employed 5 years after high school. 14% are living wage earners. And 2006 and 2008, 77% of the students felt high school prepared them or somewhat prepared them for school or work after graduation. And in the 2010 cohort, 87% said they felt prepared or somewhat prepared. So the next steps, I'm going to turn it over to Dina in terms of how she'd like to end the presentation. But
as far as next steps go, we wanted to present to the board, and we're going to begin to release publicly the data. We have worked with principals this week to, and they're going to go back to their schools, because in addition to the overall district data that you saw in regard to, say, 59% of all kids in the MATSU in that particular year going on to higher ed, 77% going on to some type of education. Each individual school is also, data is prepared for each school and how each school fared in the overall assessment. So they're going to work with their schools. We'll take these data and plan for how do we, if there are results that we feel that we need to improve upon, then we would discuss what types of programs and services would change those. And so we're asking, some of that might be follow up with students about how can we better prepare you and what is it that we need to do, again, to do our best to be the best in the state of Alaska. Nationally, just as a comparison, we did get some data on how many students across the nation in any one given year go on to higher ed, and it's 63%. So our 59 in Alaska being a newer resource state is not too far off of nationally, including large urban areas and small rural areas in the lower 48. So that's a snapshot. We were pretty excited to tell our own story. Going into this, I'm not sure, we weren't sure what the results would be. We were taking a risk to look at ourselves to see how this would come about. We did have those of us that worked closely on the study wrote down our percentages, and we were actually thrilled. A lot of these percentages were higher than we had guessed, and we were inside the business. So we're hoping that it will be delightful for those also who are outside of the district. And with the board's direction, we will move forward with this information and hopefully share it with our delegation, with the newspapers. We are the first in the state to do this comprehensive of a study, I believe, to use the data for that many cohorts out with the questions on work and school.
Thank you. Are there questions from members of the board? Member Cordero.
You kind of answered my question about being the first one to do this, but has there been a history in the district of gathering similar data in the past to some degree?
No. Not other than the what Mr. Tarsi had already worked on with IEPs.
Okay. And when you talked about breaking down the information, you have the breakdown on the information by schools. Can you tell us if you've noticed any trends or any concerns right now that you have just seen really?
There in the large study, there are some ratios and disproportionality data. However, it's very small. It's, you know, a half times more. And if a large snapshot would tell you that any school that students graduate from in our district, they are going to have similar to opportunities to succeed. Interestingly enough, the outliers are Valley Pathways, for instance. Valley Pathways students are more likely to get competitively employed and a living wage job than those at Colony High in some categories. Well, a lot of students at Valley Pathways, when we discuss with the principal, go on right into technical training. They don't do college first. They go into a career technical training and then right making money. So that could have something to do with it. That was some of the principal's thoughts on it. So it's very surprising. It's not that schools aren't doing as good as others. It's demonstrating that all of our schools are pretty equal in their success rate.
Thank you. Member Lacey.
Well, I guess I got to be me. I've been looking at this budget, and how much did we pay for this?
We paid $75,000 in grant money. Operational money did not pay for this service.
And my next question is, I'd really like to know how many of our employees are at that living wage stage. Anyway.
We could look at those data, but certainly most folks right out of college are not in a living wage category. If you think about yourselves as either graduating high school or graduating college, it took 5 to 7 years to able to afford a home. And that living wage was based on the median price of a home in the MATSU, what you could go to the bank for. And if you talk to most teachers and most other professions who just get out of college, whether you work for the FAA or something else, you're making about $45,000, and it takes a few years to save to afford a home. You could buy a smaller home, but a median home range, it would take most folks do that a few years after college.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have.
Member Gaddis.
I have one. First of all, I think this is a great report. I am surprised as well. One of the things, though, we have a career in tech school specifically, and I don't know how you would go about it, but tracking those kids on the tracks that they're already on to see, do they go and graduate, and do they work within those fields? And if so, you know, how is that working for us specifically? I'm just curious how we can carry this theme on.
In the future, we certainly will. We're principals already added in about information that I'd like to find out. But of all the students in the MATSU who are involved in career and technical education, only about 30% of them actually go to the career tech school. We have career and technical programs at all of our high schools, and it's just the career tech is all one total focus, so we could follow all those children, actually.
Member Larson.
It's my understanding you're going to make this public, right? And we're going, if the board approves, put it out public, or is it just going to go public?
It's public.
Is it going to go on our website?
Yeah. Radio.
The reason I like that, and I wouldn't mind a little advertisement, and I appreciate the hard work that you've done with this, is because out of all the naysayers, I keep hearing about the public schools being broken. And what I also like to see is what we're doing to improve upon this, to improve this. And some sort of method for the public to put their comments in and how they think we can improve also.
You're welcome.
So I'd like to say I got to jump on everybody here because I went to the principal's meeting on Monday, the elementary school, and so I heard this information, and I do believe that you know, this is something that needs to go out to the realtors too to show, you know, along with our annual report, to show that our schools are good schools. And I really think that we've been given a bad rap, and because we didn't have the data. And I appreciate your doing this. I appreciate pursuing grants for this kind of work. Thank you.
I think it was money well spent, because in the end, this is what we're trying to do, is we're trying to see if what we're doing here at the school district is having an impact on people's lives, not just on necessarily test scores and AYP and NCLB. So I think this type of study is I'd be in favor of having this as an annual study, and I'm sure that administration can use this as they break down the data to have discussions with their staff on the various aspects of this report. So I think it was a good report. Mr. Larson.
Just one other comment to piggyback on that. I heard the other day is we're spending public money and just kind of flushing it down the drain in our public schools, and I think this gives a snapshot of what the public schools are doing, as well as the charter and public, or the whole school district as a whole, including correspondence, everything in one big snapshot. That's what the public wants, because I keep hearing, well, what am I getting from my tax dollars? Well, here it is, along with the other studies and the other things that we're doing to improve upon this community here, our goals that we set up every year, and the things that we achieve. So, I agree with you.
Right, and I just want to clarify, just so I'm not confused, all of our schools are public schools.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Well, some people like to differentiate between the
bunch. All of our schools are publicly funded and public schools.
One of the limitations that also came about, which those of you who have college students probably understand, the purpose of choosing 5 years was to look at students when they've graduated, and by the data you realize that a third of the kids, almost 30%, are still engaged in higher education. So we would look to maybe look 7 years out to really get a good picture of if they did choose some type of education outside of high school, we were hoping that it would be completed by then, so then we could see what their lifestyle and earnings were. And that portion of it and the information about specific industry jobs, the career and technical folks at the state paid the money to find that out. They paid us to pay David to ask those questions. And so it really was a concerted effort to not spend student money that goes to teachers and students in our classrooms. We spent money from outside sources and basically sold this by saying, we'll find this information out for you if you let us do this study.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming, and thank you for presenting.
Well, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity, and also to say that it's my sincere desire that these results are meaningful and useful to you. So if at some point you have a question and you want to contact me directly after you read the full report or even about this presentation, please don't hesitate, because my contact information is on the last slide of the handout. Thank you again.
Thank you. So this takes us down to item 6, which is Superintendent Update, Student Advisory Board Report. Member Mitchell, do you have a report for us?
I'm going to defer to Kendra McPhail to give the Student Advisory Board report this evening. At today's Student Advisory Board meeting at Colony Middle School, we discussed the following. The Homeless Project, we are beginning our beginning steps today, collecting food vouchers. Today we collected up to $200 for the homeless teens. We discussed resolutions, bus waivers, and water fountains discoloration in the water. We started writing our resolutions. Our leadership conference, we discussed the food, and so now with the CTSO officers, we will have up to 300 students attending our leadership conference in February. Currently, as of today, we have a Facebook page entitled Matsu Student Advisory Board. Our next meeting is January 11th at Valley Pathways.
Thank you. Dr. Parma?
Thank you, Mr. President. My superintendent update is brief. I did want to let the board know about what's occurring with our transportation contract with First Student. It's my pleasure to tell you that First Student has, as of last week, met the requirements of the contract. We have buses en route to be here by the first of the year for activities. All buses do have cameras on them. We actually are working to have Wi-Fi placed on 2 activity buses for students to be able to access homework as needed on the long trips. And lastly, they were assessed $72,000, which was initially appealed. However, they have also paid the $72,000 that we assessed in damages, if you will, due to not meeting the contract standard the first semester. At this time, we look forward to having our activity buses for basketball season starting soon. We have wrestling, track is coming up, hockey, so we will have those buses to transport our students. The last thing was the heaters, so they have met those on the activity buses. They are outfitted, so we should see them as of the new year. And I appreciate Ken's, Mr. Forrest's work with this.
Thank you. Any questions for administration? Seeing none, this takes us down to item 7, consent agenda. And on the consent agenda, there's one item, A, minutes, November 16, 2011. Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion that we move this item.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Cordero. Is there any dissent to move the consent agenda? Seeing none, motion passes. This takes us down to item 8, action items. Again, there's a series of action items here related to each other in terms of policy. First is item A is 12-954, second reading, BP-3523, employee use of district technology. Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion that we move 12-054.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
A motion moved by Member Lacey, second by Member Powser. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, I'm just going to comment, if I may, on items A through G as a collection of items on internet use and safety with social media. We want to remind you again that these items, the expectations in the language have not changed. What has changed is that the expectations were found in many different documents, other board policy, the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and then our acceptable use policy. What we've done is put them in one area in BP to demonstrate our commitment to innovation and moving forward, but also outlining the expectations for staff and students in the use of this and the safety needs. There were two requests when this was a non-action item. One was in regard to reference 5, which is D, and we have adjusted that. And I can, there was a concern about speaking to liking friends or not liking friends, becoming friends with students. That is a Facebook term. And what we have done, we've talked to counsel, and we have continued to focus on the behavior of the business-like professional behavior. So we took that out because it could be 3 months or 3 years, and we'd have a new social media that wouldn't use the term like or dislike or friends. So we continued to focus on the professional behavior of our teachers, and they know that this expectation is already there. We will just be able to access the expectations easier. And then Member Lacey made a request for email for any political use be placed on our administrative regulation. So that is referenced in AR 4199.25 in your reading file. That is not a board policy, but we place that. So I just wanted to update you on the district's response to your concerns during the non-action items. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. We're going to start with action item A. So if there's any questions of the board for A, Member Larson, is that for A?
I was just going to ask. I had a since she was going through the whole policy, I had a request on I think action item B to guarantee that if a teacher was active in other activities and had students emailing her, and I see that you took two items out of that. Will that satisfy that teacher being able to talk?
I'm gonna ask that you just hold that, just so we. I know.
The reason I said that is that was also
right.
My request.
Right. If you can just hold on, we'll bring it right up when we get down to that particular item. What we'd like to do, I think, is go through each item that's on the floor. We bring each item to the floor and vote on it. Is this in reference to A?
Yeah.
Member Cordero.
On page 4 of the AR 3523, prohibited uses, item number 1, I just wanted to point out that the word picture form is used, but in other areas in the documents, the term used is visual, and I think that it would make more sense to say visual rather than picture because visual may include multimedia, not necessarily just pictures. And so just a comment on that.
Member Welton.
I just, when I was looking through the actual board policy on page 2, the second paragraph is that any employee who violates this policy or corresponding regulations, it talks about including termination of employment. Is this appropriate with our, does it fit in with our negotiated agreement?
Yes, it fits. All these have been cross-referenced with laws, regulations, and expectations. So nothing in here would be an expectation outside of just cause, which is in the negotiated agreement.
Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Any other questions for item A? Any comments regarding item A? Seeing none, let's vote electronically. Item passes. It's unanimous. This will take us down to item B, 12-055, second reading, VP3523-E, employee terms and conditions. Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion that we move 12-055.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Is there a same thing? We're going to have a – you already gave the staff report. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, are there any questions of members of the board for administration on item B? Member Welton.
Who has the responsibility for the oversight, and is this a change of job description or just more job duties, or people hired to cover this?
currently this unacceptable use policy is already in place, and it's written, and it is the responsibility of each school. We are streamlining this, and the acceptable use will now be provided electronically. Staff will be able to read it and accept it online, similar to our online registration where we're not having forms signed. So it is already a practice, acceptable use currently.
Member Cordero.
I wanted to point out on page 2, responsible use, and I know that some of this language was also in item A in regards to materials that are the second item under responsible use. We actually had complaints by members of the public that some of the materials that have been used in classrooms via books, printed books, contain some of these concerns. So why is it that it is allowed in a written form but not electronically when it's used by teachers? I mean, what's the difference? Why would a book that contains materials that may be seen as obscene by members of the community be allowed in a book, but if it's an electronic version, that's not allowed? I mean, can you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. This outlines the expectation. However, it's going to be a person's whether someone feels something is inappropriate or not, it's going to be investigated and queried. So this is basically setting the stage that these things are not allowed, but then we would review it. So we haven't had, you know, books with pornography and things like that, but there have been literature. I mean, it's out there. It's classic literature where some folks feel that it isn't allowed. So we have queried that. We do have policy that allows where students do not have to read what's expected.
Yeah.
But that is, it's reviewed and a determination is made for resolution on each item within a textbook or, but basically it's classic literature in which folks feel it's unacceptable.
Well, by the definition that you give here, it actually, regardless of whether it's classic or not, it actually fits within that definition.
So let me may I ask a quick question. So what you're asking is, if this is defined as such here, does that definition translate
exactly
to information in the classroom? If so, will the same standard and potentially discipline?
Exactly. And I'm not arguing for one side or the other, but I just want to point out that we need to be consistent with our overall policies.
And I believe that in our, I'd have to review it, but in our textbook and book use policy, you will see this same language. But then what happens is when someone has that perception, then it is reviewed and we find resolution because not all people have that perception. But I can guarantee that if someone came, that there, it is a written policy. It's our books and textbook use policy that we have. We would basically do similar investigation and determinations.
Before we lose that thought, could I ask administration just to, at the next meeting, just have a brief little small report on that policy and the standard by which this particular topic is judged? And I think it was it Member Welton and then Member Lacey or Member Lacey? Member Lacey.
I'd like to know how to keep from getting spam in our system. I log on to it, and being a public official, I want to read the constituent's email, but there's some garbage that comes through there that doesn't need to be there. And at one time I was told that if somebody sends 50 emails, it gets through our firewall. Is it less than that now?
Sure.
Mr. President, I'm going to request Justin Nishu, our Chief Information Officer, answer that.
In regards to spam, there's a couple different ways things happen. Not knowing the specifics of the emails you're referring to, the email could come through. If it's a bulk thing, it does get blocked. Some people, places are pretty smart. They throttle it through, so a few get through at a time, and it won't necessarily be flagged by our filter. The big flags are pulled into Barracuda, which you can manage. So there'll be some further discussion later in regards to some training for the board members, but that's something that we'll go over to show you guys how to manage the spam filters. So if you are getting specific ones, you can explicitly block those as well. Because spam changes every day. There's thousands of emails that come through that are blocked, but every now and then some do get through.
So theoretically, if I had a list of every employee in the district and had the time, I could send a politically motivated email through our system 10 at a time, 20 at a time, and the firewall would just let it go right through. Is that true?
Internally, it's the spam filter does not throttle internally. So you can send out an email to the entire staff as a staff member, and it doesn't get blocked.
But that's against the rules here. What I'm talking about is me, Joe, private citizen, wanting to send an email. I could, in theory, do that. Could I not?
Correct.
Okay.
But it would probably get blocked depending who you're using for an email. That quantity of email would be flagged as spam depending which provider you go to.
Well, let's say, for instance, I sent one to LeBron, I sent one to Lucy, I sent one to Catherine, I sent one to Terry and Jill.
It would at a time,
and it would go through there.
Correct.
Even though it was political in nature.
Correct.
So maybe we need to think about doing something about that. Is there a way to do something about that?
No, that's something you can't... you know, unless we knew we blocked you, you know, we could do that. If we knew where the email's coming through.
That would be good for me.
Is there a motion to... Oh, I'm sorry.
My second question has to do with due process. On page 5 of this document, it says appeals. Appeals to this policy may be directed to the district's chief information officer. I assume that's you.
Correct.
Is there any due process after that?
Maybe
there should be.
That then falls into the union's... their bargaining agreements, and they have to follow those steps for arbitration and appeals through there.
So you would be the administrator that immediately says no to, say, a grievance level 1?
No, this would then, if it does come to me, it then goes to HR. I'd forward it to HR.
And then they would do grievance level 1 then?
They would address it according to the union documentation, whether it's level 1 or a hearing before that.
I just want to make sure the due process system is followed.
Correct.
Any other questions regarding item B? Seeing none, there's a motion on the floor. Let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item C, 12-056, second reading, BP 3523.1, blogging. Is there a motion to move this item? Is there a motion to move this item?
I'll move item 12-056.
Second.
I'll second it.
Motion moved by Member Welton, seconded by Member Lacey. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, and we have a general staff report. Are there questions for members of the board regarding item C? Member Welton.
I was looking again as to who's responsible, and this is Mr. Stone would be responsible, I assume, or a designee. How much more work is this going to be for the employee?
Through the president?
Yes.
This already occurs. Okay. All the expectations are already in place.
Any other questions for members of the board regarding this item? Any comments from members of the board regarding this item? Seeing none, let's vote on item C. Item C passes. It's unanimous. Now we're down to item D, 12-057, second reading, BP 3523.2, social media use. Is there a motion to move this item to the floor?
I make a motion that we move 12-057.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, second by Member Larson. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, we have a general staff report. Questions for members of the board? I think Member Larson, is this the one you had a question with?
Communication between employees.
The next one.
Okay. Are there any questions regarding item D, members of the board? Any comments from members of the board regarding item D? Member Lacey.
Ms. McPhail brought up a point that the student government has their own Facebook page. I was looking at my daughter's Facebook page with her, and it seems like every group in this district has a Facebook page. How are we going to monitor that is my main question.
As most of these, the Facebook is already out there and we're aware of it. What we're saying is that if, as a teacher, you are creating a Facebook page and the manner in which you have access to students is through your position, you must have permission. If I'm a third grade teacher or a band teacher and I want to articulate and communicate through Facebook, that is absolutely acceptable, but you must have permission. What happens, what we find out about most misbehaviors or poor behaviors, if you will, by students, staff, what have you, is through reports. So similar to any other type of misbehavior, if it isn't appropriate and is against board policy or PTPC, we would address it. So the blogs or the blogs, the social media, those can continue as instructional tools. What we want to get away from is staff friending students on their own personal email or the personal Facebook in which students would then have access through their teacher to inappropriate materials, pictures, movies. So we, if we are to use social media, it is for the instructional business purpose.
Any other comments from members of the board? Question or comment? Comment.
I have a comment, and that's in regards to an instructor or teacher using Facebook. I've had parents state that they don't want their kids on Facebook. They want to have other options, and they're not really having a problem with the teacher using Facebook. They just want to know that they can opt in or their kids can opt out. So I'm hoping that we always remind ourselves of that as these teachers use Facebook for most of their students.
Through the president, we had mentioned last time, we prefer to move away from Facebook for use in classrooms to a private vendor, if you will, called Edmodo, where outside folks can't view in, they can't friend, the teacher sets it up, you get a code to enter. It is, if you didn't know it was Edmodo, you'd think it was Facebook, except for the logo's not on there. So it operates the same. It's a safe venue for teachers to teach children acceptable use on social media. So classes create social groups on Edmodo. They post pictures. It's really, they can do the same things. It's just a private, teacher-directed, safe alternative to Facebook. And in fact, lots of our elementary kids are learning social media through that safe environment directed by the teacher.
Member Welton, I think you had a comment. Nope. Okay.
Next one.
Member Mitchell.
I was just going to make a quick comment, too, about Facebook groups. A lot of times, even school-related Facebook pages, the admins aren't teachers or staff people as much as people who are in student leadership. So a lot of, like, our student government page, our teacher and advisor isn't even on there. It's just kids who operate the page. So I don't think that's as much as a concern. A lot of teachers aren't even on a part of those groups.
Any other comments from members of the board? Seeing none, let's vote on item D. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item E. This is 12-058, second reading, BP 4419.5, electronic communication between employees and students. Is there a motion to move this item to the floor?
I make a motion that we move 12-058.
For a second.
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Motion's on the floor. Are there any members from the public that would like to comment on this item? Seeing none, once again, we've had a general staff report. Are there questions from members of the board? Member Welton.
I just have a question on page 2. It says professional staff using personal social network sites all the way through it. That says district employees. Professional staff are teachers or all people in the building? That needs to be clarified, I think.
We will clarify that then.
we can change it.
Can make an amendment that it.
Do you think it's substantial enough to make an amendment, or is it clerical that they?
It's up to you.
So you folks, you'll change it. Is what you're saying? Okay, so the item will be changed. That particular item, Member Larson.
My concern is the same concern as it was last time. On the second paragraph in the second page, the last line that reads that district prohibits the use of district technology to electronically communicate with a student for the purpose not related to such educational services. And the second paragraph goes over that same kind of criteria. My concern is teachers with children, nieces, nephews, teachers that are involved in church groups, scouts, all this kind of stuff. I see that they should, for instance, if a teacher is at work and their high school teacher and their high school kid is home and sick, there's no way that you can communicate with them through anything but your personal, I guess, handheld telephone, or it's not a telephone anymore, I'm sorry.
Or it's a device.
Device. Instead of going through school technology. Is that what I'm reading here?
The intent of all of this is to demonstrate that the professional use of electronics by teachers should be for professional use. We have a telephone in classrooms that certainly employees may call their own children. It's kind of a given. What happens is when we would refer to this policy or policies like these, when something occurs which shouldn't occur, that's breaking the law, that is has become a problem. So we don't have police. It's not policed. It's not. We can't tell whether you call your own child or not from a school phone.
So the other item is if your kid or a member of your church group or your scout get a hold of you electronically on your school email, you're to go to your supervisor and report it. That's what it says in the third paragraph. Any communication that is non-related to school, you have to report that to your supervisor. What I'm getting at is a parent with children are very active in the community. If they get contact whatsoever on the school social media, they have to report that to their supervisor.
Mr. President, I think I understand Member Larson's concern, and I think the language is a little vague, and I think maybe this needs to be revised a little bit to be more clear. Because I do, from this, it can be confusing that if a student contacts a member of the staff on a non-related school issue, even if it's someone who happens to be a relative or a friend of the family, it would have to be reported according to this policy. So I think the language needs to be looked at a little better.
I understand the intent very much, especially coming from my background. However,
so instead of spending time here trying to figure out the language, I think that the items on the floor, it can be voted up or voted down. If it's voted down, then the administration could go back, try and change the language, and bring it back another date.
Well, perhaps we could table this until the next meeting.
The result is the same, though.
I'd rather table it than vote it up or down.
Yeah.
Motion's on the floor.
I'll second.
Excuse
me? Let's just take a quick recess. 12-058, second reading, BP 4419.5, electronic communication between employees and students. Administration, you were discussing that the language, you have found the language to be somewhat vague. Would you like this item pulled or tabled to clear up the issue?
We will pull this item, and we will
work on the wording and bring it back at a later time. Our internal goal of getting this done before Christmas to open up our internet for instructional use will just be postponed till that time in January, hopefully.
So as opposed to shooting the item, voting the item down, is it acceptable to the board that the administration withdraw the item and that they have the chance to go and work on the language and bring it back at the next meeting?
Sure.
Anyone object to that? No objection? Okay. This takes us down to item F. 12-059, second reading, BP 6161.4, student use of district information technology. Are there any, is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to move 12-059.
Second.
Okay, a motion moved by Member Lacey, second by Member Larson. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report or additional staff report than what we had? Seeing none, are there questions from members of the board regarding this item? Seeing none, are there comments from members of the board regarding this item? Seeing none, let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us to item G, 12-060, second reading, BP 6161.4-S, student terms and conditions. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to move 12-060.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, second by Member Pollager. Are there members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, are there questions for members of the board, for staff? Seeing none, are there comments from members of the board? Seeing none, let's vote on this item. Item passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item 9, non-action items, a discussion item, OSHA and risk management. Dr. Perarmo.
Thank you, Mr. President. This item was requested by a board member for further information, and I'm going to defer this to the expertise in the area, Mr. Ken Forrest.
Good evening. Members of the board, we provided you with a brief administrative report on exactly what it is we're doing operationally with regard to making sure that we do remain in compliance with OSHA regulations and procedures, and actually try and exceed those. As you can see, we have requested from OSHA that they do at least one inspection, or at least one site inspection every single month. And in addition to that, I did attach the three inspection reports from the Allianz insurance carrier when they came out and did their three inspections. They pick a few schools each year come out and inspect. And as you can see, we had a great year last year, and facilities is to be complimented. There were absolutely no recommendations at any of these schools. So we, you know, as we go through and work with OSHA, we're utilizing their training, we're utilizing their expertise and their ability to assist the district. So instead of waiting for OSHA to come to us, we have requested that they come as often as they would like, actually, to inspect our schools so we can keep them in compliance. In addition, each year there are major changes. We do issue all these posters if any board member would like to look at them. These are all prepared, ready to go out. They're the 2012 posters, and they're all rolled up and ready to be sent out the first of the year.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the board? Member Lacey.
Yes, I guess my question is, we do not have a bona fide risk safety person on staff anymore.
Well, Susan Taylor resigned. She was not a bona fide safety person. She was actually an insurance broker performing the role of a risk manager. And so she had been to some trainings, but it was our decision in an effort to try and save some funds to move that responsibility to include, for example, the playground inspections out to the facilities area. And so Susan was not really ever trained to the level that you would call her a bona fide anywhere close to an OSHA safety inspector. She would do walkthroughs. She would take pictures. She would respond to complaints. Deborah Rexford, her assistant, is still continuing many of those functions, and Dave Anderton and his team, with his reorganization in facilities, we now have three for lack of a better term, area foremen, and they're designed to, the redesign of the facilities department is to provide more rapid response when we hear of complaints or problems. And then the work order system is under review as part of MUNIS, and we want to upgrade that so we can get a more timely response. So facilities is now slowly but surely working off the work order backlog, and we think that's the most appropriate way to attack any issues so that we have a record of that. But everyone's been told any complaints or safety issues are to be reported immediately up the chain.
Member Lacey.
As cheap as I am and want to save money, we have over 2,000 employees, and we should have somebody that is either CSP certified or ASP certified. It's only good business practice.
Administration, any other questions from members of the board? I've got a quick one. Do you feel that we can stay within the law?
I do, and the other thing that we're doing as part of the bond issue is that we are looking at providing some other oversight, if you will, not oversight, but that's the wrong term, some additional assistance in the term of expertise for the projects and some other areas and facilities to help Mr. Anderton and his entire team. And I think that will be of more benefit than an inspector, because we can take a broader view and focus in on the areas of concern.
Any questions from members of the board? Thank you. We're going to take 5 minutes. We'll start back 5 minutes certain for the work session. Okay, we're going to start our work session. During the work session, there won't be any items voted on. And the two items that will be discussed, in which the board will have a chance to ask questions of staff, will be bonds and the budget. And we're referring to the budget that's upcoming for the coming year. So with that, I'll turn over to Dr. Parma.
Thank you, Mr. President. And thank you, Mr. Forrest, for this presentation.
I'd like to have the board refer to the 11 by 17 spreadsheet that we handed out earlier. And on the first page, you will find a summary of the high dollar items. What this is we tried to show you very briefly what the priorities are in each of the coming summer build seasons, so to speak. I want to preface all of my remarks related to the bond that, remember, the school district is not in the driver's seat here, and that is the borough assembly. You'll see as we move to the detail a little bit about some of the items that we are waiting on. So if you look...
I have to ask you a question. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You said that we are not in the driver's seat. Are we in the front seat, though?
We are in the front seat.
Because when we go to design the buildings and when we go to do a number of things, we're there partnering, correct?
Yes, sir.
So when you refer to we're not in the driver's seat, it's in terms of what?
It's in terms of managing the projects, obtaining the money, et cetera. Step one, which is receiving permission from deed for each of the projects, as of this morning, the facilities department has sent down to deed all 21 projects, actually 22. They divided 18 into 18 A and B. But you'll see a deed category on these spreadsheets. And all of those projects have been submitted to deed for approval. Once deed has approved a project or a series of projects, then the borough, primarily Ms. Tammy Clayton, the CFO, can then start the process of funding the projects. Once she's got the funding, each of these projects must be approved by the borough assembly as per the ballot language. So we're already working with Sean O'Neill, the Director of Public Works, and Mr. Moosey to develop that process. And they have this spreadsheet. Deed has this spreadsheet. And we think we're well on our way. Everyone right now is in kind of agreement as to the prioritization. And so what this does is show you the major projects on the summary, and that's the order we're attacking.
Just an interjection. I suggest, unless there's an objection by the board, that administration place on any future agenda a permanent fixture that says capital projects update, because I think over the next 5 years you're going to want an update at all your meetings as to how things are going, just to keep up. So unless there's objection, I would suggest that goes in the agenda.
And we are developing a report.
No, I don't. Our meetings, not your meetings. You said yours. Did I? Ours. You're part of this. I just wanted to.
I'm sorry with that pronoun issue.
Anyway, on the summary page, you'll see we have in year one, meaning this summer, we have starting work on the Connect New Middle School, Valley Pathways School, the Matsu Day School, major work on Palmer High School, the renovations at Big Lake, and the fields at Colony and Palmer. So those are, we have many other projects that we would like to do this summer. These are the major projects. And as you can see, there's a lot of money involved in these projects. Year two, we want to start on the Kinnick Area Elementary School, the addition for the MAP 2 Career and Technical High School, and then the athletic fields at Wasilla and Houston. Year three, Iditarod Elementary School, Sioux Valley Athletic Improvements, and the Palmer Junior Middle School Athletic Improvements. Part of this is, I have to say, this is a very aggressive build-out, and we will have to determine if the contractors that are available can meet this schedule, in addition to both borough and school district personnel to oversee and make sure that everything is tracking.
Does the grant allow for the borough and or the school district to bring on staff to oversee aspects of the project?
Yes, sir, it does. The next item, and I guess I would follow that up with, and Mr. Carney, who was did a lot of the work related to filling out the deed applications, made sure he put that money in the applications so that the oversight personnel could be funded. He also put land acquisition in there. If you'd like to turn to page 2 of this document, and we've now gone horizontal, this basically shows you by location all the projects for each location. And so you can see I've tried to put them in by color. The yellow, we want these projects, we'd like these projects to start summer 2012. Green, summer 2013. Blue, 2014. And when you look through the sheet, you'll see that what's really left by 2015 is the follow-up. We're trying to make sure that we perform as we said we would, and that we get these projects done in a timely manner, and that we don't go back to the voters for 5 years. In addition to that, you'll notice that while not listed on the major summaries, the playgrounds, we're hoping to do most of the elementary playgrounds this coming summer, and at the present time, the borough is leaning to having the district manage those playground projects. We have met with the principals, and they've been provided with a form to assist on input of the local stakeholders for all capital projects, so we make sure we're hearing from the stakeholders of each building as to how they feel these funds should be expended. If you go to the very last page, page 9, we do provide a summary that shows you percentage by summer. So it's very aggressive. We're asking for 54% of the money to be start being spent in summer 2012, 30% in summer 2014. So when you add those two together, you're looking at 85% of the funds to be expended in the first two summers. Again, we will still have to make some value judgments as to whether or not this aggressive approach can be matched. But at the present time, the borough is in sync with this. And Ms. Clayton is drawing up her cash flow projections based on this also. That's it.
Any questions for members of the board, staff? Member Lacey.
Exactly how many new employees are we going to hire to oversee this? And are those people going to become permanent non-teaching people, or are they going to be told up front that this is a two-year job and at the end, sayonara?
At the present time, I'm not planning on hiring any new employees. I am talking to a retired director of facilities, a K-12 director of facilities, about working with us on a part-time basis to assist us.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
The elementary multi-school indoor-outdoor physical education improvements, playground improvements, are they going to be uniformed across the elementary schools, or are they all going to be different playground equipment?
Thank you for asking that question. I should have mentioned that. We're going to do a district-wide bid, and we're going to standardize playground equipment. We've had that discussion with the principals. It's safer. It allows for easier maintenance. And what will happen is we'll do the bid. We'll narrow the vendors down probably to one vendor, and then that vendor will meet with each individual school community to design the playground structures or structure that they would design.
And to add to that, that would be if they chose an outdoor playground facility. We would narrow the choices to something for upkeep. But they may choose with their community to do an inside rock wall. And if they did that, then it would certainly be a choice. So it is a decision made by that community once they select a certain type of, well, we want playground equipment, then the equipment would be streamlined. But they could choose other items. It is a community input.
Member Larson, just one follow-up question. Some of the indoor and outdoor playground equipment is obsolete, is that correct? So that'll be removed regardless of what the community chooses to replace?
What we're looking at now is any equipment that's deemed unsafe is removed. If the equipment is still serviceable, we're not removing it until we can afford a replacement. It is my recommendation that we go through this first cycle. And then as we prepare for the next bond issue, we do a thorough evaluation and get requests up front as to what should be at each of the sites. And remember, this equipment isn't, quote-unquote, for play structures. It's also designed to supplement the physical education curriculum. And so most of this equipment is designed appropriate, age-appropriate. So where you have the K-3, usually you have one size of equipment. And then 4 or 5 is another size of equipment. And at some point, we may move into like what they call a par course for our middle and high schools. So you're actually supplementing your physical education while also providing opportunities for the community to have a resource.
Any other questions from members of the board? Once again, I'm anticipating we'll have a monthly placeholder on the agenda and have updates when needed. So,
and we also plan on producing your report and publishing that on the web.
Terrific. And I want to commend you for the you seem to have a knack for data layout as well. So, thank you. This takes us on to the budget for next year, correct?
Yes, sir. So, it was requested by the board that we do a very brief budget 101. We have done that in a PowerPoint. The board has a paper copy in front of you. And on the first slide, we talk about what a budget is. And, of course, it's a projection of monies expected to come in, revenue, and money expected to go out, expenditures. And, of course, we have to balance it. It is the district spending plan. Budgets are standard for families, large businesses, corporations, and governments. It's also required by both state statute and borough ordinance. We receive our money from a number of sources, as presented on this slide, but pretty much federal and state government, the borough, and then other local contributions. The single largest contributor of funds to our school district is the state of Alaska. 68% of our funds come from the state foundation formula. The borough supplies an annual average of less than 24% of the district's funding. But the borough 24% only represents 13% of the total borough budget. So we'd like to point that out. And they, of course, they are the bank for the school district, and they collect all of our the interest. They maintain the money. Okay, we have expenditure accounts is how we use to track what we spend and how we spend it. And that is required by state statute, and we do utilize the Alaska standardized chart of accounts to do that. The two primary things that we look at are function and object. Expenditures for function and object will always total the same, but it's a different view in how you look at the money. For example, on this chart, which illustrates function, we've summarized the chart to show that the functions really devoted to instruction and instructional support are 74% of the budget. Operation and maintenance take 10% of our budget. School administration and school administrative support, 8% of the budget. Student activities, 1%, meaning 93% of our total budget is directly related to students and their activities. And that relieves 7%. For example, the Board of Education is in the 7%, payroll is in the 7%, so those kinds of things. That's function. We get to object, it becomes more specific. So you can see we have certificated salaries, non-certificated salaries, and benefits. Those three items make up 87% of our budget. And then we have such things as staff travel, student travel, the utilities, purchase services, etc. As you can see, of the 87% devoted to compensation, 48% is for certificated salary and 14% is for non-certificated salary. And I apologize, that appears to have slipped on that slide. And the remainder is for benefits, 38%. Okay, how is the budget created? We compile lots and lots of information, and then we have developed ratios and metrics, which are the tools we now use to build the budget in an effort to be as transparent and equitable as possible. Ratios are things such as how many students per teacher, how many students for a clerical, for a nurse, for safety monitors, a librarian. A metric is where we look at things and say, what are we spending per student for facilities or maintenance? What do we spend per student on payroll? And we use those type of metrics to determine how we relate in relation to other districts. For example, 12% of the Anchorage budget is devoted to operations and maintenance versus our 10%. This is a little small for those in the audience. I apologize. We will be posting this entire presentation on the web tomorrow. And here we have the proposed 2012-2013 ratios and metrics. So you can see we're proposing K-2 classes 26 to 1, 3 to 5, 28 to 1, 6 to 8, 28 to 1, et cetera, et cetera. Now, these are the ratios used to develop the budget. Actual class sizes are somewhat less. So we prepare a preliminary budget. We then provide that to the superintendent who reviews that budget, recommends any changes along with her staff. Once that's done, then we bring it to the board and take it to the public for feedback and approval. So it's really a circular cycle. We prepare a budget. We submit it to the superintendent who then, Dr. Paramo then submits it to the board, and along the way, of course, we are holding public hearings, as we showed you in the previous meeting on the calendar. Once we have board approval, that preliminary budget is submitted to the borough not later than April 1st, as in accordance with borough ordinance. Revenues for the state and the borough are revised to reflect the actual amounts as we move forward to final adoption of the budget. This slide is all but unreadable to those in the back, but it will be posted on the web. This is detail of our first analysis or proposal, if you will, related to our forecast for next year. This one assumes no multi-year funding. What I'd like to do is move to the next slide, and it is also assuming. This has different assumptions. If you look at the upper left, it says assume a three-year funding component of $100 increase to the base, to the student formula. You go to the next slide. Here's a summary. So what we've done here, our three-year funding commitment from the state, a $100 increase to the base student allocation. If you look at the 2012-2013, and this I need to point out, these are extremely preliminary numbers. We have not received any word on funding, official word, from the state or the governor. So here we have, if we received $100 and we got no extra money from the borough, no additional state supplemental funding, then our worst case scenario would have us $10,333,000 in the hole, requiring approximately 103 personnel being laid off. In addition to that, as we've indicated previously, we are anticipating a shortfall of $3.7 million in the transportation fund. That would require 37 additional staff. So our worst-case scenario, even if we received a $100 increase in the base student allocation, would be staff reductions of 140. Why is that so large? This year, we received one-time funding from the state equal to $134 per pupil. Therefore, if we only got $100 increase in the base, we would actually be looking at a $34 per pupil reduction in funding by the state of Alaska. And that's why this is so dramatic. You can also see best case, even in the best case, then you can see that would be a 2% increase in borough funding. And I will tell you now, I'm developing budget scenarios that will be asking the borough for a 2% increase in their funding. A $100 from the state and a 2.5% increase in the supplemental, which was the one-time $2.3 million we received from the state this year, we'd still be looking at 69 FTE to come down. Why? As you know, we're in a three-year contract, 2% increase to all employees, and we're using a factor of 10% increase for benefits. Now, that is split by contract 50-50 at the present time with our employees. So we're using that as an increase. Next slide. Again, more detail, which you can look at in the next slide. Here's a summary where we had a three-year funding commitment, $125 increase, and you can see the numbers. They're similar, still dismal. We're still looking at significant staff reductions under this scenario. The next slide. Again, the next one. Now we're down to a three-year funding with a $150 increase. While the numbers get a little better, it's still bad. Finally, let's go to the next two slides. We go to the next slide. This slide is what we are using for planning. So I would like to point out that we are not planning presently on the doomsday scenarios, which you have seen. What we are planning on is a zero on our worst case in this scenario, zero increase from the borough, a $100 increase to the state foundation, a zero increase in supplemental funding, but a 5% increase in student transportation funding. The best case, which is most probable, so I like to point out right now that where we're moving forward in developing our budget scenarios, we're saying we think it is very possible that we might be able to get 2% from the borough, that we probably could get a 100% increase in the base student allocation, and that we would get a 2% or 2.5% increase in the state supplemental funding and at least a 5% increase in the transportation funding. We would still be looking at a shortfall. $100. Did I say percent? $100. If the state would seem wants to give us a 100% increase, that'd be great. All these numbers would be positive. After all, oil has not dropped below $100 a barrel. That said, we're still looking at a situation. All of these numbers assume no reductions anywhere else in the budget and the 2% compensation increase across the board and the increase in benefits. Obviously, as we move forward, the governor will be presenting budget numbers or a proposed budget on the 15th. We will be adjusting these numbers, and we'll have additional information for the board, of course, at your in your January meeting. Next slide. At this point, that's a very preliminary look. I want to stress that. But we feel that there is there's cause for concern, and we will be looking through the expenditure side of the budget as to what can be done to reduce the impact on our students.
Thank you. Questions for members of the board? Member Lacey.
From the looks of this budget, it would appear that everybody in this room is going to be in a classroom in the next 3 or 4 years. Not me. LeBron, you, Lucy, myself, because there's not going to be any teachers left at the rate we're going. Am I not correct there?
That was total FTE. It was not just teachers. That was FTE. So it would be spread across the employed groups. But, yes, we would be losing teachers unless the funding is improved. I need to point out that we are not the only district in this situation across the state. We did a survey on transportation. We had about 19 other districts were kind enough to send me their transportation information. We have compiled that. Deed has a copy of that. Our lobbyist has a copy of that. Dr. Paramo and I met with the commissioner on that very issue. 30 of those units are directly related to transportation. The state did not provide an increase this year in transportation, and it was negligible the year before that. So we are working hard with other districts to point that out to the state. And we believe the state is going to recognize that there is an issue in funding transportation. So 30 of those units, we're hopeful it won't be just a 5% increase. What we are proposing is that districts be reimbursed for actual home-to-school transportation costs, that the state reviews what we are spending and pays us for that cost. That's maybe a little more work on behalf of the districts and a little more work on behalf of Deed, but we believe it's fair, and our legislators, we have discussed it with our local legislators. They're aware of the issue, and I believe that we're going to get support in that. That's 30 units right there.
I just want to say thank you for making this easy to read and easy to understand. I don't think that's ever taken place in our district 20-some years that I've been around.
Thank you.
Earl Larson.
So your best case scenario is how many staff FTA are we going to lose if everything comes true?
Well, what we're not really calling this our absolute best case scenario. We're calling it a most probable, kind of in the middle, 85.
Now, and looking at FY 2013-14, it's the same. Every 1% increase in pay to the 2,000 employees is how much money? Approximately.
Yeah, well, no, it's about, well, we're spending, roughly $134 million, so 1% is $1.3 million.
So 2% this year is equivalent to 2.6.
A little over. Mm-hmm.
Over $2.5 million.
$2.5 million.
The reason I bring this up, I do keep abreast of what's going on nationally in school districts and what's going on in, of course, our school district. And there's been a lot of concessions made by unions and work with the unions over this deficit that can't be reached. Is there any work going on, or is there going to be any work or talk with our unions on this particular issue of loss of FTEs because of we can't maintain that sustainable increase of two? What is this? 3-year budgets, 2, 2, and 1, I believe, isn't it? Something like that.
It was 1.75, 2, and 2.
2 and 2.
And the board had, Mr. Larson, the board had actually
charged the district and the unions to work together on the health issue, so that those and the savings there could be upwards of $2 million as well. So it's working on the ends of the costs with benefits. What you're talking about is a rollback.
I'm talking about nationally, many school districts are talking with their union leaders about sustainable increases and if they're sustainable or not.
Correct. Yeah. And if it isn't, whatever they've negotiated, they're rolling back and going back to old. They're changing their agreements to keep staff.
When we negotiated this contract, the unions knew at the time that there was going to be a loss in FTE. So the responsibility is not only on the school board, but on the unions also. So what I was going to propose, or is there a proposal where the unions and the school district talk, and does that agreement still hold water? Do the unions want to continue?
We are continuing talks, but a lot of times, as Mr. Forrest said, these numbers are out in the air. We don't know what our governor is going to propose, nor do we know what the legislature is going to appropriate. So talks now about that are a little bit premature. We put these numbers together on this is what we think, this is best, this is worst, this is right in the middle, but certainly we're going to engage in discussion about the budget with people over time when the picture becomes more clear.
Well, then the case scenario, if I may, Mr. President, follow up. The case scenario I'm getting at is it's not only the school district and the school board's responsibility to try to maintain the teachers. The unions also need to be a major part of this, either the negotiations with the borough and the state, I mean, because it's part of their negotiated contract that we can't sustain. So if we do seek borough and state increases, that I believe that it's not just the school district's responsibility, but the negotiated union contracts and the union's responsibility to also look at assisting and seeking this kind of thing, or maybe considering other options, or we're going to lose staff next year, like we lost staff this year.
And I think knowing the outlook, NEA, CEA, MSPA, MMM, the mid-level management, would partner knowing what's out there in the future. Now, whether we might come out at different angles, but I don't believe that our associations want to see a reduction in staff.
And the reason I bring this up is I went through the 1985, 86, 87 era when we rolled back as a union, because all the employees were union, we rolled back our negotiated pay raises in 86 for not wanting to lose staff members. That was negotiated or talked with the state, legislative, and the governor, and the unions sat down and had a long discussion. And I'm just saying, is that kind of discussion in our near future?
Sounds like possibly. Mm-hmm. Depends on what happens with the state in terms of funding this spring. Our contract's up when?
We have next year, and then it's up.
So it gives us time. In a manner of speaking, gives us time for the end of the contract. But
this year, I mean, we're going to lose next fall. We're going to be short 86 teachers.
Then we may have to enter into those discussions once we get a clearer picture from the legislature and think what's happening. Along those lines, has the commissioner contacted you in the past to try and get some numbers to estimate what the BSA should be to actually maintain a program? And I think that figure came out to either $354 or $454. What was it? Do you remember?
$340.
$340 on top of what we currently have, mm-hmm. which I think represented I don't know how many millions. With some very large figure that
it's very large.
Floored folks in the department. Anyway, but that's just to maintain where we're at. Member Larson.
And I just want to follow up with when is our earliest time to start negotiations for the next contract? Is that next year?
October. Of 2012.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the reason that dialogue should start now, and I assume it is because if we go into a negotiations for another three-year contract and look at, even a 3 or 4% increase over that 3 years, that's an additional $5 or $6 million. Mm-hmm. Unless it's sustainable, unless that money can be sustained through the state or borough revenues coming in, we're going to lose more teachers.
And a very significant piece of this is actually going to occur next year. Next year, employees will experience 50% of the increase to insurance. So we pay about $20,000 in benefits per employee. If it is to go up about 10%, last time it went up 7%. Just using an easy number to do the math, if it went up 10% on $20,000, that's a $2,000 increase per employee. $1,000 of it is paid by the district, but out-of-pocket expenses for our employees would be $1,000. Some positions, the salary, that would be a very large impact on a salary, $1,000 a year. So we have employees that want to engage in those conversations, and we have employees and unions who don't necessarily want to because they're really, the insurance is for everyone because we have one coverage, but not everyone makes the same salary. So there are differences of opinions, but to say yes, do we want to do all those things? Absolutely, we're in planning to do them. Will everyone come to the table equally? It's already been demonstrated we're all coming from different avenues, and we'll see what comes back. But are we thinking of those things? Absolutely. They've crossed our mind, plus some.
Just one quick follow-up, but we just can't keep kicking the can, as Mr. Dunleavy would put it, down the road. This needs to be addressed now, because the next three-year contract after that and so forth and so on is, I don't see where this is sustainable in our budget.
And it's true, and I believe that the reduction made last year was a demonstration that it isn't being kicked down the, no. 125 less FTE work for our district with 380 more students. The realities are here now, and I believe that people see them, people know them. It's not a false threat to say we might be reduced by 85 FTE. So the realities are here, and I'm going to let Mr. Forrest comment.
Two comments. One, on behalf of both the board, the administration, and the negotiating groups, the state of Alaska had a really long history of always funding the BSA, and in some cases forward funding the BSA. So to not fund the BSA last year was an unexpected event. The three-year contract that was entered into on the supposition by all parties that the state would continue its previous behavior and fund the BSA every year, and in some cases forward fund it. And that did not occur. If this year that does not occur, then you would get a very strong recommendation from me as we enter into negotiations in subsequent years. You should not do multi-year contracts. You cannot lock the board or future boards into a multi-year increase. And so many states have outlawed multi-year contracts for that very reason, because they feel that in times of uncertain revenue, you should not lock in expenditures. And so given this point in time, unless the behavior is demonstrated to be significantly different than other areas of the United States, I would have to be recommending no multi-year contracts until you have a sustainable revenue stream.
Other members of the board, questions regarding the budget? We knowledge is power. You know, we'll work. We'll do our best here in the upcoming legislative session to try and get some additional funds. But we'll also have to plan appropriately. Member Larson, do you have a question?
No, I just want to make this statement. This needs to be out front and transparent and out here for everybody to look at. And I agree. Dr. Paramo, it is not a scare tactic. It's reality. I don't know how many teachers I've talked to and how many people have talked to me about loss of music, loss of library, loss of teachers. And it needs to be a full, transparent, which I believe it is, but advertised. This is what we're looking at as a school district.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm assuming, again, throughout the spring, we'll have periodic reports on the budget. And
yes, sir.
Starting January.
Yeah. Future item, or, yes, future items, future business. Anyone have any future items, future business? Dr. Paramo.
I would like to, for the January 18th board meeting, change that to Matsu Central School's auditorium. The work will be complete at that school for finalization. We'd like to demonstrate and share the successes at that school.
And when's the next meeting after that?
February 4th, is it? February 1st.
I'd like to recommend that we have a meeting up at Willow Elementary on February 1st. If there's no objection, I'd like to have that happen. Member Larson.
Yeah, no. Future items, are we talking about?
Yes.
Is there a possibility on the future items we can put down the student board meetings on this also? I mean, it's just one more line, when they are and where they are meeting.
We could do it in a reading file as in the calendar.
File, or maybe at the board.
Board Connect.
Yeah. Board Connect, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And also on the Board Connect, I mean, they do a report. Can we have that report put on that Board Connect also?
I'll work.
Through the president, yes, that's a good suggestion. I will work with the Representative Mitchell to get that accomplished for Tuesday.
They'll use their electronic devices to communicate. Member Cordero, did you have one? Member Lacey.
I just want to caution everybody that I'm trained in CPR, and future items, I would like to make a resolution to where we give Fronteras Charter School 13 acres next to the day school for their, they need a new school, and it's a chance for us to get out of an expensive lease.
You would be recommending a recommendation to the borough since it's borough land?
Yes.
And you would like that on the next meeting for discussion?
Yes, and then I want to vote on it. Okay. As long as it happens.
Member Welton, do you have a future item or two?
Okay, I'm not done, sir.
I'm sorry.
And I guess everybody in the room is familiar with the Frontiersman's poll on cell phone and email use during public meetings. I think this is a policy that we need to get in front of, and I would like that to be us to work on a policy, maybe at a work session very soon.
Well, first of all, I just need clarification. First of all, I'm not familiar with the Frontiersman's poll on, what was it?
Okay. A lot of people know that there's a big flap about the borough assembly texting and whatnot during meetings. They had a poll here in the Frontiersmen that, as I looked at it today, it was like 1,300 against and 187 for. I think as a body we need to make our own policy to keep everything open and transparent, because I don't think we have a policy about this yet.
Okay. Member Larson and then Member Gaddis.
I'd like to make a point of order on the request for Frontiers. The school site committee was set up to find school sites, and we're dealing with the Frontiers. And any recommendation for property, let me finish, any recommendation for property or school site should go through that joint borough school district, because that's where it goes. And if we rule on it as a school board, then we supersede that committee, which is a borough school board joint committee to find sites for schools. So that request, a point of order, should go through that committee and not through the general session of the school board.
And how would we initiate the request to go through that?
Any school board member can request that committee by putting that request in.
May I read something to you?
Sure.
There is a borough ordinance, as it's 09-157, and on page 2, it says a charter school, an existing charter school that has been in existence for 5 years or more, may request the borough and or the school district to acquire permanent facilities for the charter school. Permanent school facilities include providing for land, buildings as follows, but not limited to the design and such. Also, on the same ordinance, it also gives the charter school seeking this land two positions on that, temporary positions on that committee. If you would like it, I'll be more than happy to share it with the committee.
That's already being dealt with on the school site committee, but I'll go to Ms. Gaddis.
Go ahead. What is on there? It's already on the agenda for the next site selection committee meeting, and that for that whole concept is location possibilities. So, just a suggestion: when is the date of that next meeting? Monday. Could you make that meeting?
Monday,
this
week.
It's public's invited to those meetings as well. So I would suggest you go to the meeting and then see how things go there, and then you can let us know how things...
I just want to point out that the last meeting we had, Mr. Forrest gave us a list of leases that we had, and these things are bleeding us dry. If we had given it its own property, that's another, what, correct me if I'm wrong, about $30,000 a month that was not going into that. So, and then time is of the essence because their lease is running out.
All right, and I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying there are some processes in place now. Let's give them a shot real quick here. We'll see how things go, and then we'll stay within the parameters of our borough code, our policies, and the vehicles we currently have in place to deal with this. So it's not a shutdown. It's not a. We're going to talk about it on Monday. Yes.
I wanted to talk in regards to the electronic devices, texting, so on and so forth. And we haven't gotten our laptops yet, but that'll be another issue, laptops. Personally, I use Google Calendar, so when we calendar, I'd like to be able to access my device and calendar at the same time. I think that another form of communication, which is texting or emailing, we also have a form of communication called whispering or talking or writing notes. So, I mean, if we're going to take communication as a whole, which I think that's what texting is, then I think we should look at it as a whole. Otherwise, I don't think that we should just single texting out. My comment.
So, policy, you're recommending a policy, no communication during the school board meeting.
Exactly. Yeah, personally, I don't think it's broken. I would prefer not to go there.
President Libby?
Yes.
I think that would include eye signals, facial expressions, coughing, grabbing your hair.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Please, Mr. Forrest.
For the board's information, the laptops are now ready. We need a board decision as to whether you want a work session or whether you would like individual appointments so we can give you your laptop and have it ready for the next meeting or future meetings. So it would be my recommendation that we contact you individually and set your laptops up if the board so desires.
Okay, and I need to make a comment. There was a little bit of levity here, but I've never been one to shut down a board member's request to bring something forward for discussion, and I do think we should bring that forward for discussion, the item that Member Lacey brought up, as well as the Fronteras, the communication issue plus the Fronteras issue. All I'm asking for the Fronteras issue is that there's a site selection committee meeting on Monday, and we just start with that process and we work our way through it. There's going to be no attempt to not allow board member requests to be heard by the board and have a discussion on them. Are there any other future items?
If we could add for an administrative report, the audit, yearly an audit is presented. It's part of our policy. We could make that brief and do that on the January 18th meeting.
Do we have to act upon that item? Do we have to accept that in an action item?
No.
Okay. Member Cordero.
You can choose to do this through a reading file or maybe a brief presentation, but I would like to just get an update on where we are in the civics and financial literacy. And also, we had heard a report about the gifted and talented students, and I know that there were some meetings with some parents. I just want to know where we are with that. Thank you.
And are there any other future items? I have one. Can you give us a report or an update on where we are with the fiber issue? Fiber. Mm-hmm. Fiber optics.
Right. Well, there's been no change since the last report because we can't, you know, we can't dig in the winter.
Okay.
So we'll give you an
update. Well, you can't. It's just very hard.
Right.
But I got it. Okay, thank you for the report. Are there any other items? Okay, seeing none, this takes us down to persons we heard on non-agenda items. Speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or a group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room clear if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may refer to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. Maximum of 1 hour per meeting. Do we have anyone signed up at this time? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon non-agenda items at this time? Seeing none, this takes us down to correspondence committee reports from the board. Are there any committee reports at this time? Lacey.
About 3 weeks ago, President Dunleavy and I were at the Matsu Central School APE committee, I think it is, and I am the voting member on that. We won't go into why I don't care for that, but the voting part. I would like to compliment Principal Brown on the fact that, first off, there were some concerns brought up about culture and things with the school was running, and Principal Brown took the bull by the horns and ran with it, and I believe he's doing a good job there. He's addressed the concerns they've had, and I think the school's going to go.
I concur, and I'll just add to that. They've developed a matrix of issues and items that are outstanding and kind of a timeline as to when they were dealt with or if they're in progress and so forth. And that the whole school concept is actually, you know, it's a partnership between the families, that particular school staff, and our school district administration as well as our board. So I think the only thing I would ask, and if Member Lacey concurs with this, is that we continue to help foster the development and evolution of that program, because I think, what is the student population at right now, our enrollment?
It's a little over 13.
And last year it was approximately?
12.
So we gained 100 students, and I think that as we continue on this road to improve the program, I think we'll see more students and families attending that program. So thank you. Member Gaddis.
Yes, went to the Joint School District School Board Borough Assembly meeting, and we talked about the bonds, and had a really good meeting with the borough and the borough manager. We talked about Cottonwood Creek Elementary's traffic update, and it's ongoing. The site selection was discussed, and essentially we know that we've got to get on it and get that KGV site ASAP. The day school was discussed, and it was agreed that the school has a different need and that we won't be able to use the same architecture that we've used in other schools. Discussion of Valley Pathways using the same architecture that Sioux Valley has used. Dr. Promo discussed that money would be released for the wireless soon, and she described the Bring Your Own Device program. Our next joint meeting will be on January 9th at Dr. Promo's office at noon, and our next school site selection, it's going to be on December 12th at Station 61 from 3 to 6 p.m., and I'll email you the agenda, Neil.
Any other committee reports?
Yes. if I could use
okay.
that.
Okay. This takes us down to item 14, comments from school board and administration. Member Larson.
I was in my other life today in a hearing, and we were, you have to give the date, and I gave the date as December 7th in the year 1941, because that was pounded in my head as a child, as 9/11 is today. And I just want to make note that it's the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor today, and to remember our vets throughout the ages. So I just wanted to make a comment to that. And I also wanted to tell the staff, I really appreciate the openness and all the reports that we got that really didn't pop up on our website that are there for everybody to look at. There is no hidden agendas, and I really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Member Gaddis.
Yes, I want to mention that I went to Wasilla High to a Christmas piano recital, and I very much enjoyed that. I also want to mention that I was at the assembly meeting last night in which, according to our last information on December 13th, our joint assembly board meeting has been canceled, and I heard once again that it is up and the borough assembly voted to have that meeting. Unfortunately, I cannot be there because I have made other plans, and I'd like to see if we could poll our group to see if we will have a quorum, because I think that we may not be able to make that meeting.
If the board doesn't mind, can we do that quickly? Member Larson, will you make that meeting?
No.
Member Gaddis?
No.
Member Pollager? Member Cordero?
No.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
And I vote, I won't be there, so we don't have a quorum for that particular meeting. I think we might want to send a message over to the borough to try and reschedule it if they wish, if not. In any event, anything else, Member Gaddis?
That's all I have. Thank you.
Member Pollager.
I want to thank Mr. Larson for mentioning Pearl Harbor Day. Also, I want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas, to be politically correct. Happy Holidays, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, I hope I didn't miss any. But have a Merry Christmas.
The Wally, isn't it?
Member Welton.
I want to thank the administration for the report on the buses. I really wanted to make sure that we were staying on top of that. And I visited schools, went to Burchell for their Thanksgiving, and it was great. They had an incredible dance, of course. And the dance thing is next Tuesday night. If we're not going to have the borough meeting, I suggest people go to the list. There's a long list of things occurring that night. I also went to last night to the Fronteras presentation. I went to the elementary school one. Was at Birch Trees, and they overflowed the place. They were at the First Baptist Church of Palmer, and I had to park in the subdivision next to the church down a block because there was absolutely no parking. The place was packed, and the students and the did such a fantastic job, and the staff. And then I was at the Palmer Jazz concert the other night, too.
Thank you. Member Lacey.
I've said enough for one evening.
Member Cordero.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you, Sarah, for the card and the gifts. And I want to thank again administration, too, and echo what the other members have said. This year, the quality of the work is really amazing, and I'm proud to be here on this board. Thank you.
Member Mitchell.
I just want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas also, and thank you for all of my gifts. Enjoy your time off.
Dr. Paramo.
Mr. Forrest, I do have one other item. I'd like to mention that for future items,
there from starting next week until the next board meeting, we will have a survey online in regard to school calendars. So please look forward to the data in regard to feedback from stakeholders on future school calendars. That was part of the board challenge to me and directive, and over these next 6 weeks, we will get that accomplished. And so you can expect a report on the 18th for that as well.
Thank you. And I'd like to echo Member Larson. 7 years ago was a instrumental day in our history. I went to Houston's high school's Christmas program, and it was actually a very nice program. It was well done. Families and the kids really seemed to enjoy what they were doing. And I just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I thank you all for the gifts and the good work that all of the staff is doing. So I think we got a terrific school district. So with that, I need a motion to move us into executive session.
I make a motion that we move into executive session.
We need to read the, and Member Welton will help us with that.
Matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. And the items are future negotiation items and personnel. And in the executive session will be board members, Dr. Promo, Mr. Forrest, Ms. Gardner, anybody else? Okay.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Welton, seconded by Member Lacey. This will take us into executive session, and when we come out, we'll adjourn. Thank you very much. Have a terrific holiday. Have a safe holiday.